What a beautiful song that is. Wouldn't you agree? Yes. And I don't know about you, but I keep finding those songs like earworms throughout the week. And it's a wonderful reminder that there's only love. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
We're beginning a series this Sunday for the next few weeks, talking about the power of intention and how it plays out in our transformative journey. We're all about transformation here, but the question is, how do you make that happen? How does it come about? So we're going to look at how intention is a part of that journey. What is intention? Why does it work? How do you do it? Unity's third principle tells us that our experience of life happens through the thoughts and the beliefs that we routinely hold in our minds. We create that experience. And this series is going to be a deeper dive into that principle. So how do you explain a miracle? Webster defines it as an event or action that apparently contradicts known scientific laws. I thought that was a really interesting definition. And the operative words are apparently and known. Our ancient ancestors, if they were magically transported here all of a sudden, would find our life pretty miraculous. Wouldn't you agree? You know, you flip a switch and the light turns on, there's airplanes flying overhead, computer screen, we're talking to our loved ones. And yet, the principles of electricity and computer technology and aerodynamics all existed in ancient times just as much as they do now. The principle always existed. It just wasn't known yet. So that kind of puts things into perspective. What else isn't known yet? It kind of opens up the space of possibility when we think of it that way. Our minds, if you remember, can only make sense of about 2,000 bits of information, while there are 400 billion bits available to us right now. I mean, who figured these things out? I don't know. I take their word for it. But that's a whole lot that we're not seeing, that we're not aware of. And what might be happening in those remaining billions of bits that we're missing in our sensory world? What are we missing here? What isn't known yet? The writer and investigative journalist Lynn McTaggart is on the lookout for miracles that haven't been known yet. A few years ago, she wrote a book called The Field. How many of you are familiar with that book, The Field? It's a fabulous book. It showed up in my life right around the time when I was doing my doctoral work for my dissertation. And what I discovered in it was that it was a wonderful resource, that Lynn McTaggart is a wonderful resource for explaining quantum concepts, for summarizing scientific understanding in a way that I can understand it. And it's got to be simple for me to get it. And she had the ability to do that. In fact, I thought she was a quantum scientist herself and then discovered, no, she's a reporter. But she's a very good reporter. And later, she wrote The Intention Experiment. As she was doing all this research for the book The Field, she became very intrigued by all of it and decided she wanted to do her own scientific studies on the power of thought. What happens when a whole lot of people get together and think the same thing? So she created all these intention experiments that she did and wrote about that. Her latest work is called The Power of Eight, Harnessing the Miraculous Energies of a Small Group to Heal Others, Your Life, and the World. And this comes from the research that she spearheaded. This book documents the transformative, the miraculous changes that have taken place through the power of group intention, small group intention. And it offers very compelling evidence for the power of the mind, Unity's third principle in action. And she enlisted the participation of several highly respected scientists throughout the world to help her with this work. And she followed a rigorous adherence to the scientific protocol and principles that she needed to do throughout this investigation. And her experiments have had repeated measurable results. And that's very important in the scientific world. You know, in that world, it's not enough to do something once. You have to keep doing it over and over again before it becomes significant. Cool. Not waive the $100 fee. And there's a few bits of information there. That's right. Thank you, David. So Lynn describes herself as a stunned witness to story after story after story of extraordinary healing that she got from all of these, this group. And throughout the book, we kind of watch her evolve from a definite skeptic to confirmed believer. We just see that evolution taking place. But as an investigative journalist, she wasn't just about reporting. She was about asking questions, right? Being in the question is a really important component of our spiritual journey. Wouldn't you agree? Yes. One of my classmates in ministerial school was a broadcast journalist before she went into ministry. And I was always impressed with the questions she asked in class. And I realized that she never stopped being an investigative journalist or investigative reporter. She just started reporting on different things, investigating different things. So Lynn came up with a series of questions that she wanted to answer in all of this work. Questions like, when it comes to group intention, what's the best wording? Should it be specific or will a general request work? Should the intention senders all be in the same room together or can they be all over the place? If it's done online, do they need a live feed to the attendee or might a picture do? Did distance matter? And what was the optimum length of time to hold an intention together?
It's the slides
program. To go ahead, yes. Thank you. So she invited people from all over the world to participate in practicing intention and to help answer these questions. And the group began with plants. Again, in the scientific world, you want to begin with baby steps, something that can be easily measured, something that is scientifically quantifiable. So you start at this beginning and you proceed very slowly. So even though she was very disappointed about this, she was impatient to get started. She had big dreams, you know, let's repair the ozone layer. Let's end violence in all the hot spots. The scientist says, nope, you start with a leaf. So she did. And they got measurable results in what they did. They affected the biophoton emissions of a leaf, which can be captured through Curlian photography. So they actually changed the output of the emission. And when you target simpler biological systems like a leaf, it helps to limit the sort of endless variables that you can run across when you're working with more complex subjects like human beings, for instance. So even when using a control group to compare the results, there are all kinds of other possible variables you have to bring into play when you're working with people. Things like someone's internal state when they participated. Maybe they just had a fight with their boss before they came and they aren't able to get into that coherent state. Maybe they have a cold coming on, whatever it is. Maybe the attendee doesn't believe that this can work. Or maybe they do believe that it can work. And either one can skew the results. And maybe there are people other than this group praying for this person's health that we don't know about. And that is also boosting the effect. You know, all these things can happen. When you use plants, however, you can demonstrate that any effect that happens comes from intention and not the amount of sleep the leaf had the night before. Of course, many of us talk to our plants. We know they have feelings, but that's another story. So then they moved on to water after that. And they were able to change the pH level of water through intention. Now, can you hear the implications for this, especially in the environmental state we find ourselves in on this planet? Isn't that exciting? Yeah. Really? This blows my mind. It's very encouraging. Now, both of these experiments had significant measurable results, and they went on to do a total of 30 experiments, 26 of them with measurable change. And of the four that did not have that, three of them had technical issues. So that's pretty successful results. So what about people? Well, now she moved on to that, and she started doing live workshops, weekend workshops with people. And she took her live audience of about 100 people, and she divided them into groups of 8, making sure that they didn't know each other as best that they could do that. And then of those 8 people, she would ask one from each group who had some kind of physical or emotional issue to nominate themselves as the intendee. And so that person would tell their group what was going on. They would come up with a specific intention that they would all do together. They would join hands, and for 10 minutes in unison, they would send that intention to the intendee. And then before leaving for the day, Lynn asked all of the intendees in the room to come back the next morning prepared to describe, first of all, what their experience had been as being the intendee during the intention work. But also, she wanted them to then share their current mental, emotional, physical state as it was right then when they came back. And she told them, do not invent an improvement that's not there. You know? You know how we kind of do that? Don't be worried about making the people in your group feel bad. Right? If nothing's happened, it's just an experiment, she said, something we're trying, and let go of performance anxiety, because it's going to be okay. Well, when everyone returned the next day, Lynn was bowled over by the incredible results. And they heard this time after time as she did it with different groups. Everything from diminished physical pain to easing of long-term arthritis to lifting of depression to reversal of scoliosis of the spine to severe chronic conditions disappearing. One woman with advanced multiple sclerosis showed up without crutches the next morning. Another had her sight restored from a cataract-like opacity that covered one of her eyes. Now, Lynn didn't know what to make of these results. She wondered if it might be the power of suggestion of some kind. Or maybe that the person had received some kind of inner permission to mobilize their own healing abilities. She was asking those questions. She actually worried that these results were going to undermine her credibility as a researcher. She was worried about that. But throughout the year, no matter where they went, every workshop they ran, when they put people in groups of 8 and had them share intention, they had the same results, hundreds and thousands of times. And with help from all of these people that participated, they came up with some answers to the questions she had posed. When it comes to group intention, When it comes to group intention, what's the best wording? Specific, most effective. Should the intenders be in the same room together, or did it matter? They didn't have to be physically together. If it was done online, did they need a live connection, or could they use a picture? It worked either way. Did distance matter? No. And what's the optimum time to hold the intention? 10 minutes. Now, this is very helpful information when we are creating protocol to use, and she incorporated it all into the elements of the power-up process, which is what we will be using in all of our spirit groups. Now, I have to tell you something. This practice moves us into the story of interbeing. Do you see that? Yes. It takes us out of the belief in separation. It puts us firmly into the understanding that we are one, that there's one presence, one power, one life living as and through each one of us. And that's a good thing, because the belief in separation traps us. It traps us in a paradox. It tells us on one hand that in order for the world to change, billions of people are going to have to change their behavior. And it tells us, on the other hand, that what I do doesn't matter. Do you see? We have this, and it's overwhelming. It's like, what can one person do that can make a difference? It's got to be all of us. But this tells us otherwise, that our actions do matter, because you can see the conflict in these two. Being a part of a small group coming together with an intention is a highly significant way that we can take concrete, transformative action that affects change. Small actions can make huge differences. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
So we need to start orienting our choices and our actions toward where we're going. Living our lives with nothing and no one against us. Living the truth of one presence, heading toward what is emerging rather than tripping over what has been. Are you ready to walk that path?
Yes.
Because it's called evolutionary activism. Are you ready to be an evolutionary activist?
Yes.
The count of three, I want us all to say, I am an evolutionary activist. One, two, three. I am an evolutionary activist. Because there are some perks. Another startling effect that happened when these groups did their intention work together was changes that they discovered in their brainwaves. So a research team measured all the brainwaves in people that were participating. And they discovered a scientifically significant decrease in brain activity, an almost global quieting of the mind. Couldn't we use some of that? There was a shift away from stress, from anxiety, reduced activity in the brain that's associated with negative thinking and fear and worry and depression. Evidence of an increase in communication between the different parts of the brain. And these changes occurred immediately, as soon as they started to do the 10 minutes. It happened among people who had never before been engaged in a Power of Eight intention circle. They were beginners. And their brain waves, this is so cool, they actually began to resemble those of long-time meditators who've been studied by neuroscientists, nuns, monks, Sufi masters. Andrew Newberg, who's a neuroscientist, has studied their brain waves. The brainwave signature that was showing up for these participants resembled that after 10 minutes. Let's hear a wow.
Wow.
Whoa. Now, here's why it works. It happens when we get out of our stuff and start to send compassionate, loving kindness to others. Do you see it? It's so simple, and it's so powerful. And we're gonna delve more into that as we go through this series. But suffice it to say this, that the stories we may have been telling ourselves about how our minds work, about how we can't make a difference in the world, how that our actions don't matter, that the world is not going to change, those stories are manifestly wrong. They are not the truth. We are not our stories. We are fields of possibility. Do you feel that about yourself? Interconnected with one another. One presence, one power, one life. Each of us an expression of the one, and our thoughts have great capacity to make change when we live in the space of possibility. And those limiting beliefs that might tell us that a better, more beautiful world is not possible, they meet up with the heart that tells it it is. It is. And when you hear about this amazing, miraculous power within you, don't you feel hopeful?
Yes.
And energized?
Yes.
So we want that hopeful energy to morph into authentic, optimistic action. Our hearts and our minds no longer need to be at odds. One presence, one power is the story of interbeing. And in that realm, there's a reunion of heart and mind, spirit and matter, right brain, left brain. Work and play, all of it. And we begin to live it and leave behind the illusion that we are separate. So what do you think about miracles? Where are you on the continuum between skepticism and belief? Because our heart might be telling us it's possible, but then the mind gets in there and says, you know, how naive are you to believe in miracles? But consider this. The mind that questions the validity of a miracle is, in fact, an example of one. Let that sink in a little bit. Our bodies are virtual gold mines of miracles. I once heard a delightful elderly gentleman. He was an old-fashioned country doctor. You remember those? Had his little bag and everything. And he was speaking on the ability of the body to heal itself, specifically using natural herbal remedies. And he spoke about the web of life, its interconnectivity, its interdependence, and how miraculous it all was. And I remember he started his talk with the words, "Consider the nose." And then he went on to extol the virtues of such an amazing work of art, describing in detail the olfactory receptor neurons and how they worked, and the ingenious filtration system keeping the body free of foreign particles. He went on at some length, and then he said, "And that is just the nose." His obvious delight with the miracle of the body, it captivated me, and to this day inspires me. Miracles abound everywhere. Just the fact that we are here right now is one of them. Do you feel the miraculous self that you are right now?
Yes.
Feel it. Feel your aliveness. Feel that you're here now. Walking miracles. I love Albert Einstein's quote, "We can treat life as if nothing's a miracle or as if everything is." And it's the truth. If you are not in a Power of Eight spirit group and would like to be, they start this week. And you can talk to Miss Tara Weir, who's here. You can also email her.
We have one spot left. We have 80 people in a group, but the next series launches in April. So if you're not in a group yet, email me now, and I will get you a line for the group next time.
I will just talk to you in person.
Yeah, yeah, I'm there. But I need, for memory, I need you to email me so I have it for April.
Bring your heart to the table. Do not underestimate the power of your contribution to the healing of the planet. We are all here to make a difference in our world. Do you feel that? And I know I've shared this quote before by Arundhati Roy, but it bears repeating. Another world is not only possible, she's on her way. On a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. We want to listen for that. So consider these questions. Do you believe in miracles?
Yes.
And are you ready to bring them into expression through evolutionary activism?
Yes.
Those are the correct answers. You all win. Next week, we continue in this series. We'll delve deeper into the quantum world of virtual entanglement. Oh, look forward to that. God bless.
So unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict.